and welcome to this NICE podcast about the NICE clinical guideline on hypertension. This podcast will be focusing on implementing the recommendations for using ambulatory blood pressure monitoring in the diagnosis of hypertension and for monitoring the response to antihypertensive treatment. During this podcast, we will abbreviate ambulatory blood pressure monitoring to ABPM. I'm Katie Worrell, implementation lead for this guideline, and with me is Brian Williams, Professor of Medicine at the University Hospital of Leicester NHS Trust. Professor Williams was the chair of the group of experts who developed this guidelines. Professor Williams, some listeners may be unfamiliar with ABPM. Would you mind briefly explaining how it works?
Okay, so the principle of ABPM is to try and make multiple readings of blood pressure. So it's a bit like the normal blood pressure monitor that you may be familiar with in the doctor's office, which is an automated device attached to a cuff, usually, cuff around the arm, press the button, and the monitor reads the blood pressure. The main difference from conventional blood pressure measurement is that the monitor is automated, so it includes a timer and an automatic pump that blows up the cuff on the arm at preset time intervals during the day, so that blood pressure is recorded multiple times while the patient is going about their normal daily activity. And usually the monitor itself is worn as a sort of pack on the belt, and the patient still has a cuff under their shirt or blouse or whatever around their arm. So that's basically what the monitor looks like. It looks like a normal blood pressure monitor, except it contains the technology and software to allow multiple measurements to be made. Once the measurements have been made, they are then downloaded via computer to generate a report which will give the average blood pressure during the day, the average blood pressure during the night, and the average blood pressure over 24 hours. But for the purposes of the NICE guideline, we're only using daytime measurements.
Oh, I see. Thank you. And thank you for that information. That actually brings me on to my next question. When are NICE recommending ABPM is used?
The main change in this guideline is the recommendation to use ABPM for the routine diagnosis of hypertension. So when a patient goes off and has their blood pressure measured opportunistically at the doctor's surgery or the gym or something like that, if that level is high and raises the suspicion that there might be hypertension, the recommendation is then to move straight to offering ABPM. And this will give a series of readings in a single day that will be averaged out to confirm or refute whether or not the patient has high blood pressure. The high blood pressure will be diagnosed on the basis of the daytime average blood pressure, and if it's above 135 over 85, the patient will be confirmed as having hypertension.
Thank you for that. I understand that this is a change to practice. Until now, how have clinicians diagnosed hypertension? And what are the benefits of ABPM over these previous methods?
Well, until now, physicians have generally used clinic blood pressure measurements in the doctor's office to make the diagnosis of high blood pressure. But the important thing here is that we never make the diagnosis of high blood pressure on the basis of a single reading. We require a series of readings just to be sure that the blood pressure is persistently elevated, because quite often patients' blood pressures can appear high when they first get it measured in an unusual environment like the doctor's office. And also there is natural variability in blood pressure. So we need a mechanism to get multiple measurements to confirm the diagnosis. And previously the way this has been done is that the patient has usually been recalled to either the doctor's surgery or a visit to the nurse, who will perform further measurements of the blood pressure, usually over weeks or months, to confirm whether the blood pressure is persistently elevated. What we're doing here with this new approach using ABPM is condensing the period of observation down to a single day by saying that if the initial reading is high wherever it's measured, if you then go to ABPM, this will make a series of measurements over a period of a day only, and the average of those measurements will tell you whether or not the patient has high blood pressure.
That's brilliant, thank you. It sounds like there are notable benefits in using ABPM to people with suspected hypertension and the NHS. How many measurements are required, and how long does the person need to wear the ABPM for?
So what we're recommending is that patients would normally wear this during their normal waking hours. And for example, we've quoted in the guideline the period would be monitored over from about 8 a.m. through till about 10 p.m. But that's obviously variable depending on the patient themselves. And usually the device is programmed to take readings every half an hour. And some of these readings may fail if they are So what we've also stipulated is that there should be a minimum of 14 readings from which to derive the average, so that we end up with a very clear reading, which is based on a substantial number of readings rather than just one or two.
Yeah.
So you need at least 14 readings, usually taken every half an hour, and usually over the period from early morning through to you go to bed.
Okay, thank you very much. What's the diagnostic criteria when using ABPM to diagnose hypertension?
So we currently have two stages of high blood pressure. Stage one is a systolic pressure in the office of 140 to 159 and a diastolic of 90 to 99. The equivalent blood pressure average on ABPM to stage one hypertension would be a blood pressure over 135 over 85. Stage two hypertension was usually diagnosed based on office blood pressure of 160 systolic or more, or diastolic of 100 or more. And for ABPM, that would be an average blood pressure on ABPM of 150 over 95 or more. Now, what is clear is that the ABPM averages are lower than the clinic readings, and that's quite normal because we're averaging out a whole range of multiple readings rather than just a few readings in a clinic setting. So this is expected. However, if the difference between the office reading and the average reading on ABPM is more than 20 millimeters of mercury systolic or diastolic, this indicates what we call a white coat effect. In other words, an abnormally large difference, usually due to an alert reaction, which the patient may not be conscious of when they visit the doctor's surgery. Now, under these circumstances, the ABPM value will tell you whether or not the patient is hypertensive. However, if you then decide to treat the patient, then you have the dilemma of what readings you're going to use to monitor the patient. Because if you know that the clinic readings are exaggerated relative to the ABPM readings, in that setting, you might also consider using ABPM to monitor the patient's response to treatment. Or alternatively, using home blood pressure monitoring, which many patients quite like to do when they're on treatment to look at their response to treatment. But in general terms, we're not recommending using ABPM for monitoring the response to treatment for the majority of patients. For that, we're recommending clinic blood pressure readings, and the target for the majority of patients is less than 140 over 90.
Thank you. So just to add a little bit more about monitoring response to treatment. So you're recommending clinic blood pressure monitoring for most patients in this situation?
Yes, we when we looked at the evidence, we were convinced that the evidence suggested that ABPM would be a significant advance in improving the quality and accuracy of diagnosis of hypertension, and that's why we've recommended it. We couldn't find a sufficient level of high-quality data suggesting that there was a significant advantage of using ABPM to monitor the response to treatment. And also, this would have quite significant cost implications as well. So we have suggested that for the moment, we should continue to use clinic blood pressure readings to monitor the response to treatment. And the target that we're aiming for is less than 140 over 90 in people up to the age of 80, and less than 150 over 90 in people over the age of 80. The higher target, reflecting the fact that we haven't got any evidence suggesting a more aggressive target in older people. Now, there will be circumstances in which patients say, well, I've got my own monitor and I'd like to monitor my own blood pressure rather than coming back to the surgery. That's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. And under these circumstances, if the patients take a series of home blood pressure readings while seated under control conditions, then we would recommend a target of a blood pressure average of less than 135 over 85, which is the same as the diagnostic threshold. Yeah. So we do say that home blood pressure monitoring is likely to be used increasingly by patients to monitor their blood pressure control as they become more popular. But for the moment, we're not formally recommending that as the preferred option, although it is essential in some patients with white coat hypertension.
Brilliant, thank you. We discussed earlier that using ABPM to diagnose hypertension is a change to practice. I would anticipate that this will therefore increase the demand for ABPM services. How can this increased demand be met by clinicians?
Well, I think this is one of the big challenges, really. I mean, and it's all about implementation and commissioning and looking at the existing provision. There's no doubt that the amount of monitors currently available, either within practices or via services operated by hospitals, is not going to be sufficient to meet the demand for an increased level of use for diagnosis as we've recommended. So this is going to be a period of evolution. It's going to require practices and commissioners of services to get together and decide what is the most effective way of increasing the provision of ABPM to allow this diagnostic procedure to be used. And that process should certainly take account of what is best for the patients in terms of convenient access, convenient drop-off of the device, etc. And that may be alternative models of care that don't necessarily need to visit the doctor, or the doctor's surgery could be provided by other providers who offer ABPM services in more convenient locations for patients. So I think it's a challenge, but it's also an exciting opportunity to look at different ways of providing care, always focused around the fact that, you know, what is best and what is convenient for patients. And I think if we do that, I think this is going to be achievable. The major challenge is going to be the upfront procurement costs at a time when cash is a bit strapped in the NHS. But I think that should be overcome, because I think this is an important change that will lead to a more accurate diagnosis, ensuring that those people who've got hypertension get treatment and those people who haven't don't get treatment that they don't need.
No, that completely makes sense. And in relation to those comments, I'd advise listeners of the podcast to have a look at the implementation advice and the costing tools associated with this guideline, as these focus directly on implementing these recommendations concerning ABPM. Thank you very much, Professor Williams. For more information about the NICE hypertension guideline and access to the NICE implementation tools, which can all be adapted for local use, please visit our website, www.nice.org.uk/guidance/CG127. Additionally, NICE has incorporated all of the recommendations from this guideline into the NICE hypertension pathway. This online tool brings together, in one place, all of the NICE guidance and associated products relating to hypertension, including technology appraisal guidance, clinical guidelines, and public health guidance. The pathway is available from the NICE website, from NHS evidence, or from http://pathways.nice.org.uk/pathways/hypertension. We hope that you will find the information in this podcast useful in helping you implement the NICE hypertension guideline in practice. Please let us know what you think about this podcast by completing the short questionnaire accessible on the podcast page or by emailing us. implementation@nice.org.uk